afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, April 1st, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
Happy April Fool's Day.
Indeed.
You know, I went online and I just typed in the best. You know, I was going to do something, and I typed in there about the April Fool's jokes, you know, on the web that you can do on the radio and stuff, and something popped up, and it was the best and worst April Fool's jokes from around the web. And, you know, they named like seven of them, and the number one, the good. And I'm thinking to myself, man, does this date me, because I didn't even understand it. This is the good. It was Google Tulip. Do you know what Google Tulip is?
I would have no idea.
It says, in this guy's writer's humble opinion, it was the best April Fool's joke this year. It's a product that lets you communicate with tulips. They're making progress with cacti, which just want to be left alone, it would appear. The premise itself is par for the course on April Fool's Day, the perfect mix of mildly plausible and but why. But a few of the comedic touches on the video really makes this prank shine. I'm there, huh? There. Oh, this article has to be the prank, because I didn't get it. I didn't get it at all. But
That was it?
Yeah. Then they have something about this, and this one, it's Shutterstock. Do you know what Shutterstock is?
Yes.
Okay, and this happens to be from the best April Fool's joke from a tech company. Shutterstock is unveiling plans to build the world's largest physical library called Stock IRL, which would host shelves upon shelves upon shelves of stock photos, watermarked videos, and music tracks. Best line, because sometimes innovation means moving backwards.
Oh. Okay.
So these are the new world's geeky pranks for April 1st.
Okay. So. All right. That's a sort of New Yorker-esque humor, I guess.
I don't know what it is, but I'm old school humor, you know. But anyway, I'm glad you, if there's any listeners out there that really understood what they were talking about, please let me know. Send me an email, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Now let's move on to some serious stuff here. And of course, that's we're all holding gold and silver coins. So let's get to that. A little pressure on gold today. That must mean the dollar is stronger. $1,287.60 for gold, down $5.40. It did touch $1,300 earlier in the day, but after the London markets closed, it just started to go down. Silver was down $15.17, down 2 pennies. Platinum was $852, not a lot of change. Palladium took another upward bound, up almost 3%, up $37 at $14.26. Now, I'm not sure if that was just, you know, it's just to me, I think what we're seeing in palladium is a... you know, people thinking that they're getting in there and buying palladium at a low price. And that's what happens. You saw it happen with, you know, the latest thing was the cryptocurrencies. You know, they get a little dip. People go in there thinking it's going higher. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's just the way it trades before you see some lower lows. But anyway, USDX today was up only 0.06, 97.25. Crude oil was up 1.5 at 61.63. Crude oil, I don't know what's under that, but it's certainly moving higher at a pretty good pace. The stock markets today, they were gangbuster. I'm not even sure why. You know, stimulus, I mean, that's the only thing that makes these markets go higher. But the Dow was up 329 points. 26,258. The NASDAQ was up 100 points at 78.28. The S&P was up 32 at 28.67. And again, I really didn't see, Dave, any reason why we should have experienced these big moves in the markets today.
scratch your head kind of a day. I mean, supposedly they, you know, the Dow anyway was driven by strong U.S. and China data.
What data though? That's just what they say, the strong data.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I was listening to a little bit of CNBC this morning. They're still talking about the, you know, the trade agreements is propping it up, and a lot of what went on last week is just overriding the Fed. Particularly not increasing the rates and keeping it the same. This is still a little bit of a follow-through from that is, you know, what I'm kind of anticipating.
Yeah.
You know, corporate profits, you know, with a strong dollar, I mean, they're about to drop. So I can't imagine. And really, I think with the Fed rate staying the same and discussions of possible cuts, it kind of just outweighed what the GDP really came in for last year and the revisions on, you know, and the expectations on the first quarter and so forth. They're just not even being discussed, you know, that they're as low as what they are. So again, you know, people are not getting, you know, focusing on what's really true. You had retail sales, they unexpectedly fell in February. So again, this is just another sign that economic growth has shifted into low gear. And, you know, you could say the $1.5 trillion tax cuts is wearing off. It's beginning to fade. But I'm, you know, it's something else. I'm hearing more and more from people on their personal income taxes that they're ending up owing, not just a little, but a lot, because they changed all the withholding and everything, and now not enough money was taken out, so now they're owing instead of maybe. So it's, you know, it's just, you know, just a big distortion of, you know, of everything that's out there. So the loss of economic momentum, of course, would reflect the higher interest rates, slowing global growth, the trade war, in which we all discussed, and even a little bit of uncertainty over the Brexit deal, Dave.
Yeah, well, you know, retail sales dropped 0.2%. You know, economists polled by Reuters had forecast retail sales rising 0.3%. So that's a difference of, you know, 50 basis points, 0.5%, all in February. Now, retail sales did increase slightly over 2% from a year ago. Now, the surprise drop in sales last month could partly reflect delays in processing tax refunds in the middle of the month. They've also been smaller on average compared to prior years following the revamping of the tax code in January of last year. Some articles are saying that cold and wet weather could also have hurt sales. The dollar slipped against, you know, its counterpart currencies after this particular report. U.S. Treasury prices also paired losses. Now, excluding autos, gasoline, building materials, and food services, which cracks me up, retail sales fell 0.2% in February after an upwardly revised 1.7% upward swing the month before.
Well, you know, the so-called core rate retail sales corresponds most closely with the consumer spending component of the GDP, and they were previously reported to have rebounded to 1.1% in January, and the sharp upward revision to core retail sales in January, it was insufficient to reverse December's more than 2% plunge. Growth estimates for January-March quarter are as low as 0.8% annualized rate. 0.8 for January to March. The economy grew at a 2.2% rate in the fourth quarter after expanding at a 3.4% clip in the July-September period. So,
yeah. Well, you know, here's the reason I think paper markets are up today. Manufacturing.
Yes, that's true.
You know, U.S. manufacturing activity rebounded a bit more than expected in March. according to an industry report released this morning, showing that production, new orders, and hiring picked up. The Institute for Supply Management said its index of national factory activities rose to 55.3 from 54.2 in February. And the February number had marked the lowest level since November 2016. As we advise listeners, a reading above 50 indicates expansion in the manufacturing level, and a reading below 50 indicates contraction. So the reading was slightly above expectations of 54.5, that from a Reuters poll of 69 economists. Melody.
Well, you know, the production picked up a little bit. It ticked up 55.8 from 54.8 the month before. You had construction spending increase a little bit by a third straight month in February. It rose by 1% to a nine-month high. And let's see if there's anything else interesting in that report. Anything else you want to add to that, Dave?
Well, I found it interesting. I mean, thing to keep in mind, these strong gains in construction projects, which rose 0.2% in February, are coming despite a sluggish housing market, which has been held back by higher mortgage rates, expensive building materials, as well as land and labor shortages. Although, as we'll talk a little bit later, their information these days is all over the place from month to month. But there are signs of growth emerging in the housing market as mortgage rates have declined the last few weeks from last year's higher levels.
You know, you made the comment that and to me, it's nothing new. I mean, they've been doing this for a long time, but it seems like it's more now where you have these, I mean, nothing jives together. I mean, usually if they're going to lie about something, they lie or distort. I'll say distort or, you have more than one report that sort of backs up one another. But a lot of these stats, they're just, none of them even ever make, there's nothing, there isn't one that backs up another. Like you said, they're just all over the page. And it's like, are the people in these divisions, in these departments, that incompetent? Or are these really signs that, these numbers are exposing just how bad the economy is.
Well, I think it's more of the latter. What's that?
Combination, but yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's I wouldn't criticize the competency of the folks who are putting them together, but although it really is almost, inexplicable that the numbers are gyrating so much. I think what it shows is just how volatile the economy is right now, the slowing economy, and that, all in all, we're really seeing an across-the-board slowdown. There's a lot of noise and a lot of mixed signals. But I think if, you pick out the right stuff, I think we can point to that volatility, leading to uncertainty. And I think that, is what is going to drive gold and silver in the coming months.
Well, also, when you have an economy that doesn't have any underlying strength to the economy, what is the underlying strength of our economy? Free money, debt, stimulus. There isn't any real nuts and bolts. There's no foundation to support the economy that they created when it was all created by, not only just ours, but, other governments, their monetary policy. as I've been saying for a very long time, it's all been synchronized to all work by the stimulus. How can economies grow themselves out of the problems when it's all based on their stimulus? It can't. So I agree with you, Dave. There's no underlying strength. I mean, there's no foundation to any of these the economies around the world. And we can go on, Dave, and talk about the auto sales. I mean, it looks like according to the first quarter sales released by J.D. Power and Associates, they analyzed data from automakers and dealers in the first 3 months of the year, and the annual sales rate during the first quarter was 16.7 million vehicles. Sounds like a lot. Depending on the final numbers reported by automakers later this week, the pace of sales during the first quarter could be the lowest, though, since the fourth quarter of 2014, when research showed sales of 16.69. So the CEO of J.D. Power said, hey, I think we're beginning to see a slowdown.
He would be right. You know, they J.D. Power, you know, is trying to preface, you know, that the end of the peak auto period doesn't mean that sales and profits are going to necessarily plunge for the automakers. You know, in fact, its data show that the shift from less profitable cars to far more expensive SUVs and pickups, you know, is occurring. Yeah, and that's a transition that will help ease the impact of overall sales cooling off. You know, in the first quarter, 48% of new vehicles sold were utility vehicles, pickups, SUVs, and crossovers, an increase of 2% from a year earlier. And, you know, in addition, the average revenue collected for a utility vehicle climbed $800 to $33,100.
Well, they also found that the average revenue per pickup truck sold in the first quarter jumped $1,200 to $41,500 over the same time last year. And when retail sales of new vehicles fell in the first quarter, used auto sales at the franchise auto dealers continued to climb. We're going to be heading into a break soon, so we'll probably end this. Say anything else interesting in that report? Yeah, it is amazing, the demand. That's what low gasoline prices will do. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And stay tuned for the third segment, because I think Dave has something about April Fools that will make you want to go to our Facebook page. So make sure you stay there and stay listening. But go to the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And let's see, we're going to talk about farm bankruptcies. Chris Peterson, third generation hog farmer, who says, "I bleed rural," and tears up at the fate of family and friends, and has found a way to keep his small holding going and avoid the exodus that so many are making. His grown son and daughter have too. But meanwhile, Peterson is at war with the big companies that he says are destroying the culture of smaller places like Clear Lake. We're all going down the same road as the Russians with the collective farm system. There, the government controlled it. Here, it's the corporations. Interesting. While his is a dramatic rendering of the state of American agriculture, Peterson has a point. Across industries, the U.S. has become a country of monopolies. And three companies control about 80% of mobile telecoms. Three have 95% of credit cards. Four have 70% of airline flights within the U.S. Google handles 60% of online searches. And the list goes on and on, Dave.
Well, yeah, in agriculture, four companies control two-thirds of U.S. hogs slaughtered in the U.S., 85% of the steer, and, you know, half the chickens. That's according to the Department of Agriculture. Similarly, just four companies control 85% of U.S. corn seed sales. That's up from 60% in 2000. And they control 75% of soybean seed. That's a jump from about half. Far larger than anyone, the American companies Dow, DuPont, and Monsanto are among the biggest companies that control agriculture in the U.S. Now, some economists say this concentration of market power is gumming up the economy and is largely to blame for decades of flat wages and weak productivity growth. I, for one, believe they're on to something there. The issue's become a high-profile plank of both political parties and could move to the center of the 2020 debate. You know, farmers like Peterson are on the receiving end of all of this concentration. Just in the 5 years from 2007 to 2012, the number of hog farms in the U.S. declined by 25%. That's a big decline.
You know, it'd be interesting to know. I don't know if this. What do we import? You know, do we see these declines? And I mean, do we? I know we import more agriculture. Is that just produce, or does that even include meats and so forth? But we import more than we export, so that this is interesting. I'm going to have to look that up, or maybe Beth deals with a lot of, from CSC Talk Radio deals with a lot of farmers and so forth, and maybe she might know. But Joe Pfeiffer, a bankruptcy lawyer in the Iowa city of Hiawatha, says that the current wave of consolidation shows no signs of reversing. What he sees is cheap food as a culprit. In 1960, Americans spent 17% of their disposable income on food. The figure now is just 6.4%. The tight margins ran everyone out but the big dogs. Whatever the reason, you can see the outcome outside of Des Moines. A lot of towns are ghost towns because the farmers are gone. Schools are consolidating. One farmer said, "My high school graduated 86 kids in 74. It was 50 last year." And in the 70s, rural America was ungodly vibrant. 60 cents per pound of hog gave farmers a healthy profit. And now this nearby city of Swaledale has just 220 people. Just when you added in everyone in the surrounding smaller towns, there was sufficient business for a bank or a grocery store and hardware stores, you know, the two bars you need and the restaurants and a gas station.
Hmm. Well, Peterson said that's what they've done to rural America. And when Peterson says they, he means big ag.
It is.
Dow, DuPont, the Monsantos of the world. You know, in 2001, when Peterson himself went bankrupt, he changed his business model and began to raise a premium hog known as a Berkshire. That's a breed whose meat he compares with Kobe beef. Apparently, the Berkshire fetched twice the price of a standard hog. You know, the whole sequence is outside the packer system. He said he earns more from the 500 Berkshires he raises every year than from the 2,500 ordinary hogs he used to produce. It's capitalism at its best, he said. You get a price and not a fee.
But you know what's interesting, though, is the farmers, I mean, where the big money. Our food didn't go down from 17%. Our cost didn't go down that much. Or am I misinterpreting that when it comes to cheap food?
No, that's a good question. I'm not sure what that suggests. Certainly, there have to have been economies of scale that have resulted from improved methods of planting, crop rotation, and what have you. Beyond that, Melody, I don't know. Perhaps Beth will have some insights tomorrow.
Well, you know, I asked one of my ranchers. There was when they had that. Oh, this was a couple years ago, and I can't remember which state it was. They had a really bad winter, and they lost a lot of cattle and so forth. And I asked him, was it him? We got on the subject of this, and I said, well, and this is when hamburger was at a very high cost, you know, when it was hitting record pricing, and I says, well, you know. Before they had the issues with the weather, I says, we must be doing pretty well with hamburger hitting, you know, what was it, $8 a pound or something like that? I know, $6 a pound there for a while. He says, no. He says, we don't get that money. He says, we're being challenged. We can barely pay the bills. I said, even because it didn't make sense. What are you talking about? You have hamburger hitting record highs per pound. He says, no. He says it's the middleman and the grocery stores that's making all the profits. He says they're not jacking. They don't bring the price down at all. He says they keep raising it because people will continue to pay the higher prices. You know, it doesn't seem that people stop buying something just because the price is higher. They keep buying it. And he says it's not the farmer or the rancher that's getting all the bigger profits. It's the middleman and the grocery stores.
Americans love to eat.
And so, you know, hey, it's not trickling down to the farmer. You know, they have to kill their cattle and so forth because they can't afford to feed them. And so it's, yeah, but the middleman and the grocery man and the people keep buying it at the higher prices. So it's, but that's what the big corporations do. They can do that. And it's not any different than Walmart going into your local town. It's no different than, you know, all these big stores going into your town. And anyway, it's, you know, it says that it's a little different because it's government used to own these places and now corporations own it. Well, you know, corporation and governments are in it together. But anyway, that's another day and another topic. We had a great little newsletter today, ladies and gentlemen. You should go to our website, dgscoins.com. If you're not a subscriber to it, it doesn't cost you anything. It comes out once a week. Dave will publish an article. I often put Doug Nolan in there, and Wendy puts an article in there. So it's a very informative. It's not pages and pages, but just what you need. And sometimes they'll be in the news and so forth. So I encourage you to go there and sign up. But this week, Dave did an article that is being published today. And it's called, "If You Think Our Monetary Policy Is Messed Up, Just Take a Look at Fiscal Policy." President Trump said on Friday that the Federal Reserve made a mistake by raising interest rates last year, and thus has hurt the U.S. economy and stock market. At the same time, he reportedly isn't all that interested in making a budget deal with Congress on spending. So, as you know, there are two generally accepted tools for managing our economy, monetary policy and fiscal policy. The former is usually overseen by an independent central bank, and in our case, the Fed, while the latter is developed, in theory anyway, by Congress and the President.
Well, you mentioned Trump's remarks on Friday, Melody. They were part of a new attack that the White House has launched against the Fed in their unusual public split. No fewer than five Fed officials, however, the past week have touted the underlying strength of the American economy. I'll tell you, lies, lies, and statistics. They also argued that a recent wave of weak business activity is, you know, more likely to prove fleeting than lasting. You know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. None, however, said they currently back any rate cuts.
You know, most of the previous administrations, you know, they didn't care to comment on Fed policy. But, you know, President Trump has condemned the Fed's rate hikes. I mean, we all knew where they were going with it and what would happen. And indeed, Friday's comments were unusually specific about the course of action now favored by the president and his economic team, Larry Kudlow.
Yeah, our buddy. Well, you know, the Prez's top economic advisor, Larry, Melody's friend, said the White House would like the Fed to, the Fed to reverse some of the recent rate hikes and stop shrinking its bond holdings to protect the U.S. economy from weakness overseas. You know, barely 1 week after Jerome Powell announced the Fed's halt to rate in, you know, hikes. Kudlow, who chairs the Council on Economic Advisers, said that, you know, while there's no emergency, the Fed should cut rates to protect the economy from slowing down. This is our view, he said. This is the president's view. This is my view. Confirming that he'd like the Fed specifically to cut rates by a half percentage point and stop cutting its bond holdings.
I have a question for you, Dave. I don't mean to go off topic here because we're running out of time. We'll pick this up in the third segment of the program. But, you know, what they want to do, the Fed should cut rates. Where am I going? Okay, they want the Fed to stop shrinking its bond holdings. We know the Fed buys bonds. We know the government needs people to buy their bonds. So is this more than just the rate cuts with what it happens to the economy? Couldn't it be a little more deeper than they're just being pressured because they have spent so much money and they need to reverse. They, you know, you saw Russia selling their treasuries, bonds. You saw China cutting back. Do they need the Fed to actually come in and start buying back, buying up more?
No.
To help them out?
Well,
is that possible?
So. It is, sure. But
is that what this is truly about?
Well, here's a case of, you know, a case of it is what they seem to be saying it is. That is, you know, who knows what, you know, among all of the players, what, you know, personal political agenda, you know, some of them may have. But I think by and large, you know, they're all looking for the same thing, sustained, healthy economic growth. And in this case, the Fed, you know, manifested by, you know, low inflation, you know, 2% roughly. And, you know, Kudlow believes that the Fed overshot. But the fact of the matter is, when this coming recession hits, the Fed's at 2.5%. You know, in 2008, they took it down to zero. And what were they back then? In the fives? 4.5s, fives, perhaps? They went down to zero, where it stood for close to 10 years. You know, Fed certainly isn't giving itself nearly enough, you know, or a similar amount of buffer. You know, you think, well, you know, maybe that should show the futility of trying to manipulate a market-based economy. But, you know, this is a little bit different. I mean, not only are, you know, like Kudlow is saying, well, let's say you've got to cut it a half and cut it a half percentage point now. You know, Stephen Moore, one of, you know, the top prospects, you know, for Trump to nominate to one of the open seats on the Fed Board of Governors. I mean, he reportedly said the same thing, although he's now denying it, just saying that, you know, if he were on the Fed, he'd consider reversing the Fed's December rate hike. You know, he followed that up by saying it wasn't necessarily in favor of the half point rate cut recommended by Kudlow. Now, you know, more may be in trouble. You know, as recent media news outlets have, you know, reported that there's a potential $75,000 back tax issue with the IRS that, you know, could derail his nomination. And with Herman Cain being listed as...
we're heading into a break.
Oh,
we'll finish this up when we get back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
The moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Someday somebody's gonna make you wanna turn around and say goodbye. Say goodbye. Until then, baby, are you gonna let them hold you down and make you cry? Don't you know, things are changing, things are going your way.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Suderstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. And heading into the break, we were talking about, a lot of things. We were talking about the Fed and Dave's article from the weekly newsletter, the Bad Monetary and Fiscal Policy. So we, I guess the headline is, if you think our monetary policy is messed up, just take a look at our fiscal policy. And that's what we were talking about heading into the break. And we're going to continue there. We were talking about Stephen Moore and the back taxes that he owed. And, of course, another possibility was Herman Cain as a Trump nominee to the Fed. But he's also bogged down by some sexual harassment. So in addition to its announcement of holding rates steady, thus avoiding for now decisions about rate cuts versus further rate hikes, the Fed said it would stop shrinking its Treasury holdings in September.
Well, yeah, this is a big part that's sort of the unsung part of this discussion. You know, in the days leading up to the financial crisis, the Fed had about $870 billion of bonds on its balance sheets. By the end of 2014, that amount had surged to $4.5 trillion. Now, when things got better in concert with, decreasing rates, interest rates, in October 2017, the Fed started, letting those holdings, those treasuries, largely run off. That is, when they matured, they didn't buy new ones. That was an effort to put its policy back to, what it considers normal. Now, it's still they're far afoot from normalcy in terms of, the $4 trillion that are still on its books compared to, where they began 10 years ago, Melody.
Well, adjusting their balance sheet was relatively a new process for the Fed. They should be audited. But anyway, the policy should become... The policy, which has become known by financial gurus as quantitative easing, and as far as I'm concerned, they're still doing it with these low rates, was rarely used before the financial crisis. Right, Dave?
Yeah. Right. I mean, interestingly, Fed members don't like the term quantitative easing. They prefer the term large-scale asset purchases. That's just an irrelevant aside. I just found it's sort of funny. But, QE, as we now know, was adopted by a number of other central banks around the world to counter effects of, the spreading global financial crisis in their own countries. And since late 2017, the Fed has been purchasing fewer securities than those that are maturing, thereby reducing the number on its balance sheet.
Well, there are two types of fiscal policy, Day, right?
Two, they say, expansionary policy, which is almost always used. Congress uses it you know, when essentially when voters need relief from a recession, you know, the government spends more and or cuts taxes. You know, the idea is to put more money into consumers' hands so they spend more, you know, contributing more quickly, in theory, to economic growth. So, and that, you know, increased demand incentivizes businesses to add jobs to increase, you know, supply. You know, and the other type of fiscal policy, which is almost never used, is called contractionary. You know, its goal is to slow economic growth essentially by stamping out inflation. You know, the tools are used in reverse. You know, taxes are increased and spending is cut. Now, there's something that doesn't happen during every session of Congress, you know.
Any session.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting? Now, this contractionary policy, it was only implemented in 2012, right? Or no, the discretionary spending levels have been the discretionary spending levels have been set using the Budget Control Act of 2011. So this is relatively...
Yeah, the last seven years. You know, the Budget Control Act of 2011, which kicked in 2012, it's a bipartisan agreement that established these discretionary spending caps that was designed to keep both defense and non-defense discretionary spending in check. I mean, essentially, you can look at federal government spending in two broad categories. One is what they call mandatory spending, entitlements, if you will, and the other, you know, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the like. And the other is what just mentioned, discretion. I mean, Congress has the discretion. There are no, laws that mandate a certain level. Anyway, you know, the Budget Control Act also established this phenomenon known as sequestration. And, you know, that's the big term that Washington uses these days, and what, in fact, a lot of policymakers are scared to death of. You know, because when sequestration kicks in, that's if, you know, spending exceeds these legislated caps, then both defense and non-defense discretionary spending have to be cut essentially in equal increments. And, that's unacceptable, you know, depending on, you know, whether, you know, you're a pro-defense spending congressperson or you're, you know, you're pro Medicaid or Medicare. That's not a good example, but in any event, those are essentially the two types. And you know, non-defense discretionary spending this year is the second highest in 40 some years.
Wow.
Regular defense spending is the fourth highest, you know, and no elected official or few in Washington like this sequestration, because they can't control the numbers. The numbers control the numbers, the cuts, their constituencies, the special interest groups, whether, you know, it's defense contractors or benefit recipients, what have you. No one likes a budget cut. And that's what's facing, Congress as we move on through this budget year, you know, particularly as budget deficits are projected to be so much higher over the next 10 years. Read the article, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it's really an interesting article, and it really I really like that you went into detail about it. And but you know what? Congressional sources apparently are finding it's bizarre that the White House isn't interested to making a deal to block this.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, there's this controversial thing. calling it a slush fund that sequestration, you know, can't touch. You know, we know that the president wants to spend a ton of money on the military. I mean, his 2020 budget calls for $750 billion in Pentagon spending for fiscal year 2020. That begins on October 1st. Now, no lawmakers are particularly happy with the so-called slush fund angle. You know, and the White House thinks it can offset cuts to the Pentagon by parking a ton of money, you know, $100 billion in this slush fund. And again, you know, while, you know, the other account, budget accounts, discretionary accounts, you know, can be cut across the board, you know, he thinks, well, they still have this pool of money for new weapon systems, for new wars, for secret ops, and the like, and to transfer, you know, money for presumably for the southern border wall. It's interesting.
When I think of the slush fund, I think about the $15 million slush fund that's there that they've used to pay off all kinds of little...
Oh, who knows?
Who knows what?
The dark budget.
The dark budget, yeah. Oh, hey, lady, the entire article is at the website, dgscoins.com. Make sure you go there and subscribe to the free weekly newsletter and the blog. And I do appreciate it, Dave. It's a great article and a lot of information. And so we're going to talk more about this as we, you know, things just seem to not matter anymore. And they certainly don't want cuts and everything else. A couple of headlines that we probably won't get a chance to talk to today about Turkey's President Erdogan. He's kind of lost control of the capital and Ankara in local elections. That was in a setback after 16 years in power. The opposition is also ahead in the contest for mayor of the largest city, Istanbul. So he has a chance of losing out.
Yeah, he could be in trouble. I mean, his national elections aren't until 2023, I believe. But, you know, it could make life miserable with, you know, major cities being controlled by an opposition party. You know, it could create, set the stage for, you know, contested presidential elections in a couple of years and so on. You know, Melody, I also found it... oh gosh, and we're getting closer to the end of the program.
Yes, and I want to get to brevity. Yes.
Well, we can go straight to that if you want.
Well, we're going to end the show today on a little bit of a light note because there's been so much. Sometimes you just have to do this, and you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of bad things about April Fool's Day and so forth, but hey. And so we're going to move to our brevity is golden. And the hunt is on to identify today's news stories with the sole purpose of bamboozling listeners, Dave.
Indeed. You know, thanks to the tumultuous times we live in and the increasingly blurred line between real and fake news, here are some bizarre stories that we're asking listeners to tell us whether they're true or not. You know, just go to our Facebook page at DGS Coins and tell us which of these following stories are true. You know, the winner or winners will be announced on Wednesday's program. So here we go. That website, Facebook site again, is at DGS Coins. Number one, billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk has released a rap song called R.I.P. Harambe, a reference to the Cincinnati Zoo gorilla that was shot after a small boy fell into its enclosure in 2016. Number two, a comedian with no political experience has won the most votes in the first round of Ukraine's presidential elections, according to exit polls.
True.
Three, mosquito bites can be avoided by listening to electronic music, specifically dubstep, even more specifically by U.S. artist Skillrex. That, according to a new study. Four, Nigerians are using their mobile phones to import pizza from London. On British Airway flights, no less. Five, fish slime could help the development of new antibiotics, according to researchers. 6. A towering gold-dusted Wagyu burger measuring 15 centimeters tall, 25 centimeters wide, and weighing around 3 kilograms. Is that right? Gosh. Is to be served at a hotel restaurant in Tokyo. 7. Armed police stepped in yesterday to help arrest a man suspected of being drunk while driving a horse in downtown Cardiff, England. 8. Musician Snoop Dogg once left a large burlap sack containing up to 400,000 pounds of cash in a nightclub. 9. The U.S. military is recruiting sea creatures to help track enemy activity. And number 10, Melody, a singing nun is competing in the Italian version of the television show Strictly Come Dancing. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, go to our Facebook page. These 10 questions will be there. You just, you know, send us a reply, you know, all of them are false, you know, 1, 5, 7, 9, 10, true, et cetera, et cetera. We'll announce the winners on Wednesday's program. And that, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden. Happy April Fool's Day, everybody.
Happy April. And ladies and gentlemen, no cheating. You can't Google any of these, okay?
Says the host of the program, who was whispering the answers.
Oh, thank you, Dave. It's always nice to have a chuckle or two. I appreciate it. And thank you, listeners, in the world we live today. But you know what? You can afford to giggle when you have your finances protected with gold and silver. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And he left for me. That's too bad.